Gardening, I think it's very interesting because you always project yourself in the future, and I always dream about what is going to look in 10 years, and I always like that in my own business also. I always looking tomorrow, you know, not looking the past, you know, because the past is important, but I'm always looking for today's and tomorrow.
Hi, I'm Dan Rubenstein, and this is The Grand Tourist. I've been a design journalist for nearly 20 years, and this is my personalized guided tour to the worlds of fashion, art, architecture, food, and travel. All the elements of a well-lived life. Before we get started, just a little programming note. This is the last episode of Season 9, but we'll be back in just a month on May 1st with our first episode of Season 10. And did you know we also have a newsletter called The Grand Tourist Curator? Make sure you sign up. Not only does it announce all of our new episodes, but it's also packed with original content each Wednesday, where we curate the best from the world of the Grand Tourist, just for you, with new museum and gallery openings, advice from artists, designers, and journalists, and more. So sign up today at thegrandtourist.net or at the link in my bio on Instagram at Dan Rubenstein. Now, back to the show. My guest today is arguably one of the most influential interior designers of the 21st century. Through his residential projects, hotels, offices for the likes of Kering, collaborations, and furniture, his aesthetic has inspired an entire generation of French talent. And a lot of Americans, too. Paris-based visionary Pierre Jovanovich. His style combines French modernism with a love of the Swedish Grace movement. His studio's work has the minimal and textured style of the first half of the 20th century, mixed with a rustic elegance you might see in a Swiss ski chalet. All with the cool color palette of something utterly Scandinavian. Pierre started his career in the fashion business, working for the legendary designer Pierre Cardin, when he decided to shift gears to design in 2001. About 10 years ago, he started producing his own line of furniture, where large, curved sofas are made from solid oak with a chic yet rustic appeal. Some of his pieces are adorned with hand-stitched decorations that subtly hint at the handmade nature of all of his pieces. He recently opened a new furniture gallery in Paris, as well as another in New York's Chelsea neighborhood, next to blue-chip art dealers, where the paintings sold are sometimes more affordable than Pierre's coffee tables. He recently designed a set for the opera in Basel, Switzerland. He's done collaborations with Dior and others. I've always thought of Pierre as a kind of present-day Yves Saint Laurent, slender, unassuming, with a sense of impeccable taste second to none. And that certain French flair that's impossible to ignore. But behind all the glamour, he's quite the introspective chap who prefers to garden in his spare time at his private and remote chateau in Provence, listen to classical music, and stay somewhat out of the spotlight. I caught up with Pierre from his studio in Paris to discuss his youth playing piano, what Pierre Cardin was like as a boss, what he really thinks about his American clients, and more. You know, I wanted to start at the very beginning, and I read that you were born in Nice and that your parents' families were from Algeria and Serbia. So I'm kind of curious, like, what your parents did and what they were like.
It's a mixed, yeah. My family, it's a big mixture. My parents live in Algeria until 1963, a year after the independence. After their marriage, my father had moved to Oran. Oran is the second biggest city in Algeria, where my mother family lives. But it was originally my mother family was originally from French Alp, and had been established for a long time. My father was born to Serbian father and a French mother, who had also moved after their marriage from Belgrade to Switzerland. Even they lead them to immigrate to Switzerland. I was born in Nice, where a lot of my French family, well, a lot of French family moved after the independence of Algeria, and it's where I grew up. So yes, there is some rooting in my history, I can say, of my family, but I don't think so. I define me. You could even say that I construct myself against the persuasive nostalgia of bygone days. There is a vague of nostalgic string in me, but I would say that my epistemic side is much stronger than this. What really matters is where I grew up. I was blessed part of this. I was blessed to live in this part of the world because of the stunning light, amazing landscape, with the presence of the sea, and also the richness of the artistic life, particularly in the 20th century, where there's a lot of artists, famous artists were living there. My outlook on life and a lot of my work come, I think, from there.
Mm. And did your were your parents in creative professions at all?
They wasn't creative at all. My father was a businessman, and my mother was taking care of their child. I have two sisters.
Ah, okay. Are the sisters older than you, or
yeah, a little older, 1 year and 1 year.
Ah, okay. Yeah, when you were a child and you played on the piano, was there a song that you played for fun that you enjoyed the most?
It was like very easy for me, like Chopin, but very classical. I learned in classical way, classical music like Chopin, Beethoven, like very easy to do it. And unfortunately, I stopped to play piano when I moved from Nice to Paris. Now I have a piano, but I have no time to start again to taking lessons. But I really wish I have more time. I think time is the luxurious part of our life that you don't do. Sometimes you miss, and that's the problem. But I always, even in the morning, you know, the first thing I do is open my Spotify and listen music, and I think I couldn't live without music. It's really and also, for example, when I walk, I listen music. When I'm in a plane, it's really part of my life.
Do you listen to music when you're working, like when you're designing?
Not really. No, I listen music very slowly, very loud, not loudly, with a sound very low when I'm reading. Sometimes, and in the plane a lot. And my second life, it's my second home, it's in the plane, you know. Then and yeah, that music, it's that maybe is not very good for your ears, but I do.
And you know, every bio of yours mentions your 8-year stint doing menswear for Pierre Cardin and yes, starting in 2001. So did you study fashion, or how did that happen?
No, not at all. It's really by chance. After graduating my high school in Nice, after that I went in a business school in Paris, I was about to start my military service, which it was obligatory in France at this time. Now it's not. And I met Pierre Cardin by chance, because a friend of mine was working for him, and he offered me apprenticeship, and I did work for his side for 8 years as a menswear licensee manager of the Benelux business, and then as a designer of men collections when I moved back from Benelux to Brussels to Paris, to menswear collection. And it was that I developed passion for shape and form.
And did you love it? Did you? I mean, you stayed for 8 years.
I love it. It was, you know, all my life was a lot of time by coincidence, because I didn't know anything about fashion. I think I have like a talent inside of me, like this very big intuitive part of my life. And I must say that I learned a lot working very closely of Pierre Cardin, and I quickly realized how lucky I was to be along such a visionary personality, and also an incredible businessman. So Pierre Cardin was as he was an artist, but also a businessman, which is sometimes, you know, you have only one side, but Pierre Cardin have two sides of talent.
And, you know, what was he like as a person, as a boss?
Pierre Cardin, I think I will say he was like an architect of clothing. He have a very strong sense of geometry, volume, angle, curves, which now it's playing with my work, often as an interior designer. He had also mastery of colors and pattern, very strong eyes. Now that he, I think I everything I learned now, I think it's from him, you know. And I think it was very interesting to start this way, not to start like really a debut, which I think I will miss a lot of things without this first experience.
And, you know, there are many examples of fashion designers of your generation shifting to interiors. So I was wondering, you know, how did that happen for you? And obviously you had this amazing experience. So how did that shift kind of happen?
Working with Pierre Cardin was originally an opportunistic move that I could not miss, I think. I had a great time with him and learned a lot, as I say. But I will say from the beginning, my heart was more in interior design. Then I switched very quickly after 8 years. I'd say to Pierre Cardin one day that it's fashion wasn't my world, and I think I wanted to be by myself, to have more freedom, more independence also. And I really cannot live with this kind of sense of freedom.
Did he take it well?
Not really at this time, because the work we do together was very good, I think, and the business was growing. Then the day I told him that I will leave, he said to me, "Oh, let's do an interior department within Pierre Cardin Group." And I say, it may be a good idea, but I really want to try by myself. Let's see if I will succeed or not. And it was a very hard decision, because at this time, you know, I have no client, I have no job. Then I quit with not a lot of money, and I start to work alone in my kitchen, drawing. First for friends, you know, because they asked, because they see my apartment in Paris and they looked, it was nice, and there was some special spirit they see in my work. And just like that, you know, I start with friends, and then I hire an assistant, which is still with me now. And it's grow like that, step by step, slowly, I think, like that.
And what was the first your first real client?
My first real client was me, transforming an apartment in the 8th arrondissement, which I bought, and also a friend, but I was paid for that, John Loring, who was the artistic director at this time of Tiffany's, and he asked me to help him in a project in Palm Beach. It was like a Art Deco small villa, and then I bought like Pierre Charot, really Art Deco pieces. It was a small project, but a very interesting project to go to very famous French, because he wanted to do with Art Deco, but with French touch. And we bought like little piece of Charot, Duprez Lafond, and it was like that. And it was published, but very long time ago, I must say more than 20 years ago now. And as I say, it was starting very slowly.
And how would you describe the design culture in France, especially when it comes to interiors in 2001? Like, what was the environment like? Because today, I would say that your taste has been so influential, and now everyone is kind of following you. But like, what were the dominant voices in Paris and French design like in 2001?
2001 is very strange, because now, from when I look at back, the test is changing a lot. When I start, my project was very clean, more white, more minimal, I must say. And now, year after year, maybe because my projects are bigger and the clients are more rich, if I can say like something like that, I think they don't want too much minimal. They like me when they hire me, of course, but they want something very clean, I think. but also very comfortable, very playful, to be happy also in their project, and it's what I like. But also, to answer to your question, I think style very different now, because I was on 2001, it was the end of, must say, very classic style. Like we lived the 18th century, because a lot of bourgeois family was furnishing our house only by 18th century, 19th century, very classic. And year after year, the taste has been changed, and they're more collector of contemporary art, more design. And if I go again back, you know, like 5 years ago, when I was presenting to some client, because I like eclecticism, to mix also furniture in my project. When sometime when I was presenting like 18th century canapé, sofa, there was like shock, because they say, I don't understand, because you mostly contemporary in your mind, and I don't understand why you present me something like that. And it was quite difficult to make them proceed with this kind of eclecticism, but now they're very open with this, and I feel that we back a little bit with classicism, and they're very more open for eclecticism or eclecticism.
Yeah, and in your residential interiors, your people like to describe your work as pioneering a sort of quiet luxury, and very much one that's sort of in harmony with contemporary art and people collecting. And how do you describe your work to maybe somebody who has, you know, you meet them for the first time, they have no idea who you are, they've never seen anything. I'm wondering if you could describe, you know, your signature to someone who's completely an unknown to you.
Well, I described, like, really from the beginning, I think I didn't change. It's like rigorous, eclectic, since the creation of my agency, to combine and contradictory requirements, such as simplicity and sophistication, luxury and humility, warmth and rigor, poetry and structure. And year after year, I think I have confidence to go further in the quest. For example, I use color and textures, which I didn't use at the beginning. But the base, however, remained the same. It's perfectionism, serious, and still clean, but in a different way, and more playful, I think.
Before we return to the program, a word from our sponsor, Lumens. As a design editor and magazine veteran for decades, I can remember keeping so many lists. Where to buy lighting, where to buy great furniture, rugs, accessories, pillows, vases, you name it. Just keeping track of where to get access to the best design houses online was a job unto itself. But today, homeowners and designers have access to Lumens.com, a source for more than 400 global brands, all in one place. What started as an insider's go-to source for lighting has emerged as an encyclopedic powerhouse of good design, celebrating its 20th anniversary. Offering nearly everything an architect, designer, or aficionado could require, from iconic names like B&B Italia and Floss to Carl Hansen and Nani Marchina. Now, when someone asks me for a great source, I always suggest searching Lumens.com first. For example, if you're looking to take a page from Pierre Yovanovitch and you're inspired by his soft, minimal, and curvaceous French look, you might look for furniture pieces from French brands like Petit Couture, or perhaps an abstract yet colorful rug from Tout Le Monde Bouchard. Or maybe you're just inspired by the beautiful crafted pieces in wood or upholstered in fuzzy fabrics. If so, you should take a look at the stark pieces from Mater or the cozy modernist works from Otto Copenhagen. I personally love the brand's Tired Man Sheepskin Lounge Chair. So visit Lumens.com to begin your search for the perfect design masterpiece for your project. That's L-U-M-E-N-S Tourist.com. Before we return to Pierre Yovanovitch, a word from our sponsor, Liegra. Sometimes in the world of design, someone creates a legacy so powerful that it creates a style all its own, one that endures, thrives, and evolves. The French House of Liegra, founded by the legendary talent Christian Liegra, carries on the creative ethos of its founder in furniture, interiors, and yachts, from its headquarters in Paris, with a focus on timeless modernism and an elevated palette of materials, textures, and craftsmanship. The latest project of the house is close to the hearts of any lover of travel and design, the Cost Liegra Capsule Collection. In 2015, Jean-Louis Cost entrusted Christian with the redesign of the Hotel Lotti, nestled between the Tuileries Garden and the Place Vendôme. Today, it's an icon of luxury travel and of Paris as the fashion and design capital of the world. The five-star hotel's redesign was completed in 2020 after Christian's passing, and the collection includes many of the bespoke pieces created for the suites and public spaces. My favorite would have to be the Cambon chair. This iconic piece has a backrest covered in tightly woven straw and exemplifies the legacies of both the hotel and the House of Liegra. Elegant, comfortable, and with a sense of timeless modernity. For more information about the collection or any piece from the extensive catalog of Liegra, visit StudioLiegra.com. That's StudioLiegre.com. A few years ago at Departures magazine, I did a story about how young French designers were all the rage and how their new aesthetic seemed to conquer the industry, not to mention Instagram. After doing some digging, I realized that many of them started their careers working with Pierre. So many roads in design today lead back to him. I wanted to dig deeper into Pierre's understanding of his own work, what has fueled and inspired his look, and what his thoughts are on the power of narrative in design. And how would you describe rigor to somebody from your point of view?
I describe rigor. It's rigor. It's very large world. I think it's rigor. So the way we work, it's very like an architect. We have different phases in the project that we. And rigor, it's clean, not too messy, very easy to understand the style and the proportions. I think at the first time you come in a room, you know the shape, the space. It's something like that. It's quite difficult to describe, but I'm like that also. I'm serious in life, and also I'm contrary. I'm playful and not serious in a way.
And how many people are on your team at the moment? How many employees do you
we
have?
We are almost 100 now.
Wow. Yeah. And how many interiors are you doing? I would say residential interiors.
In the same time? Now we have 27 projects in the same time.
Oh, gosh.
In US, Europe, Middle East, a lot in Switzerland, and some in France, Saint-Tropez, and very different type of client, very different location also, which is nice, because the only problem is all of my clients, they want to see me as much as it's possible.
Sure.
Then I travel a lot. That's why I listen a lot of music, and my life, it's part of my home and office and plane. That's the most difficult part of my job. It's traveling all the time.
And people kind of connect your style to maybe some things that you admire, like Scandinavian design or mid-century American design. I'm curious, like what sort of values you see in that maybe was new when you brought it and maybe melded, you know, connected that to a sort of French identity in a way.
I was always a collector, always a lookout for unexpected and rare piece, and I always love country of the north of Europe, which I visited a lot, and I have a deeply rooted love for Swedish grace, because it looks like me. It's not so well no design movement from the 20, but it's rigor, balance, curve, deep of materiality, and simplicity, which speak to me a lot, and also I like to push this kind of pieces because people that don't know, and I want to surprise them all the time. I love French master like Prouvaire, Perriand, which is always very beautiful in a project, but it's expected, and I prefer to unexpected pieces. Sometimes it could be, if I can say, like border, you know, in a test because of shape, because of material they at this time they this designer use, like sometimes gold, which could be bling, but at the end it's not. Sometimes it's baroque, sometimes it's very minimal. You know, it's always this balance between these two parts of tests.
What was the most daring thing you think you've done recently, where you were able to convince a client to do something daring?
Now I'm doing. I was there yesterday. I came back yesterday night from Switzerland, and I do a chalet which is like in size like a hotel. It's a private residence, but it's really like a hotel. We do a swimming pool, a huge swimming pool, like not Olympic but almost, with a spa, with a cinema the size of the real cinema, many rooms, many living rooms, many bars. There are like two bars, and at the same time, you know, it's huge, but I really want to keep in a human scale, and very warm, also because it's on the mountain, because it's cold, and it will use mostly in the winter time. Then I use like rough material, like solid wood, ceramic, colors, wood paneling. And I was there yesterday, and I really feel very comfortable in this project. Even if it's huge, you know, I think this is very important. I think it's an extravagant project. I must say, when I was visiting, like there is so many things to see, but at the end, it's not simple. But I try to keep this project as simple as it could be, with this kind of extravagant scale.
And what are the American clients like?
They're very different. They're very different because we are more dreamer, like French. You know, like we sometimes say we could do that, or we could be like that, or we will paint like this on the project. But the American, they want to know, I think, very clearly at the beginning how it will look. You know, which is not the case in France. They accept that you say it could be something like that. In America, they are more strict, which I like also, because it forced me to be very productive at a very early stage of the project. But they're very trustful also when they hire me, because it's complicated, you know, to work from Paris and to hire interior design from Paris, even if I have an office in New York with a team of 10 people and the new gallery that will open in 1 week now. Then they really want me. Then I have to be as more effective as possible, you know, as they expect. You know, but sometimes I think they're surprised the way we work. And it's not true that French people work less than American, I can tell you. Not true at all. We work a lot. We start later in the morning, but we finish, I think, later. We have vacation, I must admit, but I work a lot also.
And what are they surprised by the most? American clients.
They're surprised. Yeah, I think they're surprised by the luck we have of the richness of the craftsmen. Also, the craftsmen are amazing in France, like carpenters, people who work with glass, people who work with ceramics, and also the culture we have, because we have very famous interior design on the 20th century, I think, who helped me, who helped everybody, I think, every interior design to have the richness of background, and help you to be as very creative. Because I think good people, I think talent come from the knowledge you have reading books, seeing exhibitions, seeing antique dealer, gallery, which is very important in Paris. We're very lucky about that. And it helps you to, with a combination of many things, to be very creative.
And I, you know, you use the term narrative a lot in your work, which is something I hear more and more today from different designers, even ones outside of interiors. And can you tell me, from your own point of view, how narrative sort of plays into your projects? Maybe there's an example.
Yes, narrative, it's very important, because you always tell a story to your client. You meet them and you say, okay, your house will be that, because I understand that you live like that. Sometimes I have clients who like to entertaining, to do dinner, to have friends. Some not. Some are more private. And the subject of the narration is very close to my heart, I think. But it's following the unique storytelling of my client in daily life, or walking on the or it's the same of walking on the set design of an opera, for example. When I do a Rigoletto of Verdi for the Basel Opera, I use this narrative to drive the creative aspect of my work. It's very interesting to follow these narrative things to be as close as possible of them or the story you do, like for opera or exhibition of scenography. And yes, I have always been interested by storytelling, telling a story. That of the place, that's the honor of inventing one, you know. Like, for example, when I was asking to do the scenography of the 100 years of the Villa Noailles, which is located in south of France, in Hyères, who belong to the Noailles family, I tried to invent, I was very close of their life, but also now, because the idea of this scenography was to say that the Noailles are still alive in 23, and they hire me now as an interior designer to redo and to refit their home. Then, of course, I start to understand how they used to live in the 40 and the 50, because Marie-Laure de Noailles was living in this house until her death in 1972, and also she changed a lot is her taste. You know, she was very minimalistic when she hired Mali Steven, the architect, to build a house. And then, year after year, at the end, she was like very messy, very baroque, mixing furniture, and it was very interesting for me. And then I tried to understand that and to imagine how they could live in 23. And it's part of the narrative way, you know. And also in this exhibition, there was a text that I write, you know, like it was a dialogue between Marie-Laure de Noailles and Charles de Noailles, her husband, like they were alive and they will speak together. And Marie-Laure de Noailles was showing to her husband the new decor she did in the 23 for their house. And I think it's interesting because the narrative really following the decor I imagine for this project.
And it's also a venue, correct? I mean, for people that don't know, the Villa Noailles is sort of a famous venue for emerging design and fashion photography. And was that also part of the remit?
Yes, there was this exhibition was starting in June with the architecture and design festival, and after you had the photography festival, and after you have the fashion festival, which is bring a lot of people, mostly young, because it's a lot of students, a lot of people who want to work in fashion, on photography. And for me, it was very playful, because I was thinking to do this project also for very young people, and it was a very big success, and I'm very happy to see how much people enjoy this kind of exercise.
Do you look around your home and wonder, where am I going to put everything? the Grand Tourist certainly does. My collection of lucky Japanese cats, my 4 dozen brooches of varying levels of flair, not to mention my extensive collection of vintage magazines and other baubles collected from a lifetime of little grand tours around the world. If you find yourself in such a dilemma, California Closets can help. Their design experts will collaborate with you to create a custom storage solution based on your needs, your aesthetic, and your budget. So whether you're looking for a harder working closet, storage room for your collectibles, or a multi-purpose studio, California Closets knows how to make room for what belongs. Plus, it's easy to get started. First, schedule a free design consultation, and their designer will talk with you about your needs, measure your space, and create a 3D rendering that shows you the best way to optimize functionality. They'll work with you to refine the design until it's exactly what you want. And after building it, they'll install it with their own team of professionals. After all, the Grand Tourist knows many things, but how to use a hammer and nail, not exactly. Think of it as practical magic. A series of spells even a podcaster with 20 years of experience could never cast on his own. Learn more at californiaclosets.com. And, you know, I did a story once for a magazine that I used to work at, and it was a series of profiles on young French designers. And I noticed that a lot of them, you know, studied with you or worked with you in some way. And are you, is that something that makes you feel proud? Do you have like, do you see that there's this like generation of now French designers that are, and you're a young man, like, you know, you're not, you haven't retirement age by any means, you know, that you've kind of inspired this sort of a generation of designers.
No, I'm very proud. I'm always sad when people leave me, of course, because if they leave me, I must say they're quite brave, because it's you have to have a lot of courage to found your own company, to work by yourself, to find client. I think it's a very big moment, you know, to have the courage of splitting a company which we have many projects, many clients, a lot of energy, and to be by your own, to do what you can imagine. And I'm proud of them for that. I'm sad also. And sometimes I told them to try to find their own style and their own way, which is sometimes not the case. And I think it's sad, because it's very important for them to find their own style and own test, you know, because being successful is this, you know, to be very special, very singular, and to try to have their own hard to do and to give to people something fresh and new. And I can imagine that it's difficult working with me, like, for sometimes they leave me after 10 years or 5 years, but because they're very with what I like. And but yeah, I will push them to be more some of them, of course, to be more singular to fit it all.
Yeah. And how do you want to be different? I mean, because obviously your pieces are very, even though you might be producing them and it might be scalable, it's quite, you know, they're quite luxurious items and they're quite expensive. So I'm saying, like, how do you think of yourself as different? And I'm wondering, you know, have you ever thought about, you know, making some furniture that a podcaster could afford, like, you know, more democratically priced things.
But I will try to do the more democratic democratic pieces, maybe to also to do with a small scale, for example, like dishes, which I'm very interesting, small objects I do for also when I do collaboration for Dior, for example, I do like small objects for the house, which I wanted to do also for my brand. I think interesting me, and people, they can buy this because it's very easy to buy. And to answer to your question, my design is very recognizable mostly because of the material I use, you know, because I use like rough wood, which is very rare, because rough wood is very difficult to work with, because it's cracked You know, it's living. It's not like Wiener wood, and but people, they know that. You know, I tell them, you know, this piece will live with you. They will crack, but also it's part of the beauty. You know, because for me, beauty is not perfect things. You know, it's imperfect things are very interesting also in my work. You know, like that's why I designed this asymmetrical armchair 10 years ago because it's imperfect shape, very comfortable shape, but it's imperfect. And when you see it, it's interesting, you know. And also in architecture, and a lot of when you walk in classical houses, nothing is straight, nothing is parallel, but it's not necessary to redo everything to make everything clean and parallel. I think it's interesting to walk in this kind of project to play with, you know, and to make to feel with imperfection the beauty.
And you have a chateau that I believe you redone for yourself in Provence. That's sort of a little bit isolated yes. in the countryside. I think it's in the forest. Is that accurate?
Yes, it's. I must say it's middle of nowhere. I found this estate by coincidence. My mom her family was from there, mostly more on the north, but very close of this part of France. I found by coincidence it was belong to the family since the beginning of the 10th century, and the chateau was built. This chateau now, the chateau, the house where I live now, is from the early 17th century. Then I was the first owner to belong from this family, and it is so late because I need to really, as I work a lot, as I travel a lot, I need to be. It's very paradoxal also because I like to be alone and I like to be a lot with a lot of friends also. But it's very important for me because when I open my window from my room, I see all nature, trees, forests, little mountain because it's not flat. I feel the smelling, and I'm lucky to have a lot of animals over there. I have like dogs, cats, donkeys, chicken, and
oh, wow.
it's helped me to, you know, to breathe, to and yeah, this is very important for me. It's really, and when I'm in Paris or I'm somewhere traveling, I'm always thinking about my house, always thinking about the smelling when I come. You know, you take a road like for 3 kilometers. It's more than 5 miles, I think, and middle of nowhere. And as when you come, I always open the window of my car, smelling the pine, smelling the nature, which is, I'm always thinking about that. You know, the smelling, the color of the light, the sky, because it's in Provence, it's really clear, because it's very windy. It's not, you know, like cloudy, and it's very, the color are very defined, which I like. And I understand why there is so many artists who have house there in this part of France. And they, Picasso had a house not so far from my house in Vauvenargues, which is like 40 minutes from my house. It's a little chateau also, really the same architecture, facing the Saint-Victoire, which is close to Aix. And I believe that he was very inspired in his painting, seeing this mountain and this nature. And yeah, that's the same for me.
And what is the when is the house built originally?
The house was built in 1620, early 17th century. And I try to keep the style of the house as much as I can, even if I, of course, change because I didn't want to make a reconstitution, which is not interesting for me because there was nothing in the house. It was very minimal. There was no decor like like you can find in the 18th century, mostly in Paris because it was very rich, and the house are very ornée with a lot of corniche, wood paneling. It wasn't the case at all, and it was very, as I can say like a white box, then I feel lucky to find this because I was more free to do what I want. But even this, I try to keep the spirit of between classicism and modern way of living, you know, having bathroom. There was no bathroom at this time. There was no heating.
No.
There was only one bathroom in the house. There
oh,
was
gosh.
No heating. And I want to go in the winter also, in winter in this part of Provence because it's high, very cold, a comfortable kitchen, comfortable sitting also because I entertaining a lot. I have a lot of friends who coming. And yeah, then it's a mix of modern and very classic. And I think when you come, you feel I change. Of course, I do a lot of work, but you don't think I have changing the style of the house.
Mm-hmm. And why a donkey?
Donkey, I love donkey, and there's a lot of donkey in Provence. It's three girls.
Okay.
And really, I think they really recognize me because also I come all the time with carrots and I hug them and I really love animals. You know, I'm very close of because it's for me it's real love. You know, they're waiting for food mostly, but sometimes they're waiting just for hugs. You know, and.
Yeah. Oh, that's very cute. And you know, obviously, you know, when it comes to your work and to art is so intertwined with so many interiors that you do. Is there any art that you collect or any sort of genre of art that you like to collect yourself?
Yes, but I try to collect also because of my client, because mostly now all my clients are quite big collector. They collect mostly, it depends of them, but most of them are collecting contemporary art, and then I met some artists through them, and also I like also to commission artists to do something in the space to be connected with the architecture of what I do. I did a lot of commission with Tadashi Kawamata, which is a Japanese artist. I did like wood nests in three or four projects. I has to Claire Tabouret, this French artist based in LA, to do a fresco at the beginning for me in the chapel I have in the house of Provence. Daniel Buren, a very big window in a French, in a Parisian project, a big private mansion. I really like to connect art and architecture. I think it's make the project much more interesting, and some of my clients they like very much this kind of thing that I propose to them, and mostly they say yes, you know, to let's do something very different.
And there's nothing you collect though for yourself though.
I know this artist, then I start to collect like Claire Tabouret when she painted fresco. I bought many pieces from them. Camille Honro that I have, Basilite, some more classical painter, very famous. I collect from young to more famous artists when I can. And now I must say I'm more interesting to buy like modern art also, which I never did. And I think it's very interesting because you can find a major artist, very interesting. And also to balance and to not to be too contemporary, but also to mix all of this kind of artists. I think it's make the house more like collector house, which I like. When I do my own design, it's the same. I try to do like a new design and also to buy like vintage pieces. And also now to add more classical pieces from the 18th, French, Italian. And all of this mix make, for me, the house very chic. This is kind of the expression of the chic for me, you know, to mix everything.
And, you know, obviously you started making furniture, you're producing your own furniture and selling it separately, you know, 10 years ago now. And now you have two galleries, one in Paris and about one in New York about to open, which will be open by the time this comes out. Mm-hmm. Why go on that journey? Why sort of why take these pieces and put them into sort of into production?
I think the furniture business is scalable, I think, in a, to a certain degree, I think. Interior design is not. It's very dependent of who you are. And if you stop, you know, I think the interior part, the interior design part of your business is over, which is not the case of the... It could be not the case in furniture business. And I'm always short of time and impatient. And the business is very attractive to me because I was working with Pierre Cardin and I see that he could be an artist and a businessman also. Mm-hmm. And whole pieces are also made by exceptional craftsmen. And it's always limited. And but it still exists, you know, like it's something I liked. It's and I start also the furniture business because sometimes I couldn't find the pieces I wanted for the project. For example, when I designed big lamp for a staircase, I couldn't find in the market, you know, like for like four stairs, lamp, a huge sofa. And then I tried to design this kind of pieces because there was nothing in the market for my project, for the scale of my project. And I start like that. I hope that I can do a little better. Also, not better because it's very pretentious, but to do different from the competition, also from the competitor.
You've done these collaborations with Dior, and you did a bottle of rosé, and you've done and you also did a design for the opera recently, and that must be exciting and also very different, obviously, because
yes.
Scenography for the stage is a whole different art form. And how was that process for you?
I really have loved all those collaboration, and I really want to push them in the future to do more and more, because it's as I say, it's like you work with a client. Every client are different, and every request of this kind of brand who want to collaborate with me make you think differently, and it require conscientious effort to a part of me and my team to do something different, connecting with the brand you work with, or connecting with the exhibition you work with when you work with scenography or the opera you do, you know. And and it's always a good balance, you know, to put what you have in mind, and also to respect the command, the what they asked for.
Mm. And would you do it again? Would you design another opera?
Yes, I'm yeah. supposed to go in Rome for seeing for checking the place we're going to do. We're supposed to do the Valkyrie of Wagner, which is an opera that I like it very much, and I wish there will be much more in the future. Yes. But you have to be fast, you know, because life is, time is flying, and it's always very long when you start, really start at the beginning for like, imagine an opera, because also with the schedule of the opera, sometimes you work for 26, you know, or 27, you know, then it's long. And for me, as I'm very impassioned, I feel so long for me to wait like 3 years or 4 years that it will happen.
And, you know, as someone who's always interested in work-life balance, I think, as most people are in design or creativity these days, like, what do you do when you're not working or you're alone in the chateau with the donkeys and the dogs?
I must say I never stop, you know, because I'm very... a stressful personality. When I have an empty space, I start to be angoissé. I don't know to say, like, there is a pressure.
Anxious,
exactly.
Yeah.
And I really don't like, you know, it's sometimes I think maybe I have to go to the doctor, because it's very complicated, because I can't do nothing. It's impossible. I can't lay down in a beach, you know, looking at the sun. And mostly when I'm in my house, I gardening, because it's really something I like, because I take my dog with me. I plant. I'm a dreamer, because I always tell myself, okay, I plant these trees, and in 5 years it will be this size, in 10 years it will be this size, and it makes me happy.
And what do you dream for yourself in the future?
My dream to be less anxious. I'm more happy. I'm not saying I'm not happy, but sometimes it's difficult because it's a big team. We have the pressure of the client, the pressure of a lot of things, and to be maybe more less stressful and having the time to caring more my friend and traveling more, I say.
And what's next for you? What's 2024 look like for you?
But I hope it will be happy, a lot of business. No, but the New York gallery, I think, will help me to have a new step in the U.S. market also. I love to go to New York, really. It's really, at one point, I wanted to live there, but it was like, I think, 10 years ago, I had say I must live in this city. But then I realized that was very French and very different from American also. And I thought that living in Paris, but working in US was the best way also for me to be very connected with the French culture and trying to give what I learned for the American people, you know, like French style, French chic, and to be different also. And 24, to have more interesting clients, more nice clients, you know. I getting older, more I want to have fun also with my client, because I think trust, fun, and it make the project very nice, because sometimes it's long, 3 years, as I tell at the beginning. And I think the relationship have to be, the connection of the human relationship, it's not even more important of talent, but it's the same, you know. You have the talent, but you have also the human relationship, which is very important for me. If you have a great relationship during the project, I think the project will be nice, you know, because we both sides have fun to do it. And I think you have to be serious, because there is money, there is timing, but also it's part of joy, you know, to imagine a house for people to be as happy as possible when the project is completed.
Thank you to our guest, Pierre Jovanovic, as well as to Celine, Agathe, and Cedric for making this episode happen. The editor of The Grand Tourist is Stan Hall. To keep this going, don't forget to visit our website and sign up for our newsletter, The Grand Tourist Curator, at thegrandtourist.net. And follow me on Instagram at Dan Rubenstein. And don't forget to follow The Grand Tourist on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you like to listen. And leave us a rating or comment. Every little bit helps. Till next season.